Welcome to yet another Tibbetts staff hangout. Topic today is email, specifically email strategies. We had a couple of articles last week. Josh Centers wrote about the new mailbox app for iOS, or for iPhone specifically. And when we were talking about that in the staff list, our own Joe Kissel, who has written umpteen zillion books about email, Apple Mail on for the Leopard, Snow Leopard, Tiger, Mountain Lion, all the way up through, along with mail for iOS and spam and everything like that, said, I don't see why anyone wants this program. This is nuts. I would never use this. And so, and this prompted then another really good article that Joe wrote called, It's Not Email, It's You. Because if you've got problems with email, Joe's contention is, and I actually tend to agree with him, that it's really not your email program's problem. It's your problem. And there's a lot of different tools out there that can be used to do different things, but you really need to figure out what it is your problems are and figure out what you're going to change your habits to solve them. So in any event, my thought was today we would talk to various members of the Tibbetts staff, starting with Joe and Jeff Carlson, Michael Cohen, and Tanya Angst, and just see what everyone's email strategies are, because I'll bet they're a bit different. And to lead this, I actually don't know what people's email strategies are, so I'm going to be as surprised as everyone else when you know, Jeff tells me that actually he's writing it all on paper. So, but in any event, so let's start off with you, Joe. First of all, just how stressed out do you feel about your email? I mean, you must get a ton of email.
Yes, I do. And do you want to know how relaxed I am about email? I am as relaxed about email as I am about my passwords. My password book.
Because
I'm not saying that we here at Tidbits passwords buy into this whole subliminal advertising thing, buy my passwords book. But I do happen to have a new book on passwords to control your passwords, and it would be really great if everyone went out and bought it right now. We'll wait. I am super relaxed about, you know, actually I'm one of those people who I prefer to have an empty inbox. It's not a religion with me. I just prefer it, but my stress level tends to go up as the number of messages in my inbox increases. And that's also a sort of good metric of you know, how busy I am. So right now I'm feeling really relaxed. Let's say I'm relaxed. My relaxation level is 1 on a scale of 1 to infinity. I'm just saying.
That's good. So tell us briefly, you know, obviously you must get a ton of mail coming in to your inbox. How do you deal with it? How do you get that inbox down to 0, whether or not you're using the sort of the classic inbox 0 technique or not?
Yeah, no, I don't use the classic inbox 0 technique. That I looked at it, I thought about it, it just doesn't work for me. And, you know, I wrote this award-winning Macworld series on emptying your inbox. And that's sort of, you know, I had to sort of take what I actually do and turn it into a form that I was comfortable with the rest of the world reading about. It's a version of what I really do. So here's what I do. First of all, I use server-side filters. So I get, as you say, a lot of email messages. For example, apart from like real, honest-to-goodness, a person writing to me email, every time I sell a book, I get an email message. I really do not want all those messages cluttering up my inbox. I've gotten about 1,000 of them in the last 24 hours. Thank you, and for those of you who haven't yet contributed to that. Anyway, so I have server-side filters that deal with all that stuff that I don't really need to see. I need to get the message, but I don't need to look at them all. So that includes not just things that you know, books have been sold, but things from mailing lists and, you know, notifications from my bank that a deposit has gone through or things like that. Like, it's good for me to casually, occasionally check those mailboxes and see, oh, yeah, that happened. But it's not something I need to be actively aware of. So I just have filters on the server, putting all these things where they need to go, and in most cases also marking them as red, because really I don't need to be actively aware of them. And then I just, when the need arises, look at those mailboxes. And the server-side filtering takes care of some huge percentage of my emails. I do it on the server because, you know, the iPhone and the iPad and all of my other iDevices don't have built-in filtering. So if I want my stuff to be filtered when I look at it on my portable devices. It has to happen on the server. So I've got a zillion Gmail filters that do that.
So that's you're using Gmail then to
wire
data filtering.
Yes. So that's sort of part one. And I could tell you a whole long story about how I deal with the rest of it, but what it really boils down to is I just stay on top of it. I get an email message, I deal with it immediately. If it requires a reply, I reply. If the email is like some task I have to do, I add that task to my to-do list and then I file the email. If it is, I'm going to tell you, I have one message in my inbox right now. One, and it's really irritating me that I had this one, but the message came in just before I left to go get a haircut, and the message was telling me, hey Joe, check out this website that has a thing you might want to write about, and I haven't had time to check out the website and see if I want to add that to my things to write about list. So when we're done with this call, I'll do that. But otherwise, basically, my strategy is I deal with stuff as it comes in. I read, and I either say, okay, now I've understood this, and I file it, or I reply, or I add it to my to-do list or whatever it is, but I deal with it immediately. So when I wake up, I usually have an iOS device near my bed, and while I'm still, you know, sort of eyes coming into focus, like, oh, well, let's see, you know, any email today, you know, and I can go through 20 messages in, you know, 5 minutes, and so sort of start the morning with a clean slate, and I just deal with stuff as it comes in. And this, I mean, it was a habit that I really resisted at first. It was really hard for me because a lot of email messages require actual, you know, thought and attention. It's like, oh, I really don't want to deal with this now. And sometimes I will let a message sit in my inbox for as long as 24 hours, sometimes, if I really just can't deal with it right now. But that's kind of it's not a fancy story. It's just I just do it. I just do it. I've taught myself the discipline.
What do you do with, say, a message that is not really a to-do item? It's not something you have to go and check. It's more that it's something that you need to. It's going to take a while to respond to it. It's an email message. You're not going out and doing something else, but it's going to take some. It's going to take, you know, an hour to understand what needs to be done and write the reply.
Yes, those happen. Usually, if it's something that I feel I can get to in the next day or two, I just let it sit in my email inbox, and then when the time comes, I do it. It's very rare that 2 days will go by that I can't take whatever, you know, period of time it requires to deal with some email message. If I feel like it's going to be longer than that, I will file it and put an item on my to-do list, you know, deal with that message, and then I know where to find it. I have lots of ways of finding messages that have been filed, but for me, my to-do list is fairly short, and it's just, I don't even do anything. I don't have, like, I don't use reminders. I don't use, you know, OmniFocus. I have a plain text file. I can read that plain text file on all of my devices. It automatically syncs, and there's no drama. I just, you know, things I need to remember to be aware of today. Just keep a little list, no big deal, and that's kind of it for me. And I do get a lot of messages, but, you know, I have one message in my inbox right now. My system is working really well for me. I do want to add, because this came up in the staff discussion, you know, by email, because Rich asked, well, you know, he said, I travel a lot. And when I travel, of course, I can't keep on top of my messages as well. You know, I'm speaking at a conference or something. Things get out of hand. So when I travel, I have a special mailbox. And when mail comes in that's like, okay, I know I need to deal with this. I can't do it while I'm on my trip. I'll stick it in this after-trip mailbox. And then as soon as I get back, I can just put all those things back in my inbox and deal with them normally. So I do have sort of some layers like that, but most of the time I don't have to use them.
Okay. And one more just quick question. You said you read your email on the, you know, like the iPhone in the morning. Are you actually replying to mail then, or is that more just sort of the going through it and looking at it and, you know, maybe marking things as you have to come back to in some way?
No, I never do that. So if I can reply to an email message, obviously, you know, there's limits as to what I can do on an iPhone because typing is just tedious. If a reply is like a sentence or two, I'll just reply on the iPhone. If it's longer than that, I simply leave it in my inbox marked as, you know, it's been read, but then when I get to my desk and I have a real keyboard, I'll deal with it. So like this morning, this happened. Chuck Joyner sent me an email that I knew what the answer was that I wanted to give him, but it required looking up something that was on my Mac and sending him a URL, and sort of I knew it was going to take a few paragraphs of typing. So I just said, okay, I've read that. It's unread. It's in my inbox. When I get to my desk, I'll reply to it, and that's what I did.
Okay. Well, thank you, Joe. I'm actually going to go next real quickly. And I too don't feel stressed out about my email, although I do have periods when I get a little bit more stressed. Usually what I run into, and I'll be curious how other people deal with this, is I'll go heads down in some major project, you know, where I'm working all day getting a book out. I don't have time to read my mail or reply to anything that is more than kind of a yes or no related to the project I'm actually working on. And so that's when things will tend to build up on me and my inbox will creep up a bit. But I have a very different approach than Joe does and I think many people do. I don't do inbox zero at all. I look for inbox, completely read. Because I use Gmail, there's absolutely no downside in leaving everything in the inbox because the inbox is just a label like any other label. And so for me, unread is the key factor that identifies mail I need to deal with. And so, you know, when I get up in the morning, I'll just start at the top and just kind of go right down through it. I rely heavily on Gmail's priority inbox, which does a very good job of pulling out the messages that are important to me and then having the ones that are less important down below. That said, there are always the messages I run into where I just, you know, it's going to require me to do something or that I don't want to do or that it really isn't important, but it's going to take a long time, those kinds of things. So I have right now about 30 messages in my priority inbox going back, honestly, a couple of years. And, you know, I should take the time and go back and look at some of those old ones and probably just delete them. Or I should say, let them be read because they should just go away. I haven't dealt with them by now. And then
so
I have another 20 messages.
Jump in here and ask you, since you use a message's unread status as the flag of whether it needs to be dealt with or not, if you read a message, you've read it, but you're like, oh, now this is really going to require some thought and effort, do you then mark it as unread?
I do. And okay. And that's because in Gmail, it's just hitting Shift U.
Okay.
So it's really easy to mark things as unread. This is one of the reasons why I don't like reading mail on the iPhone and iPad all that much, even in the Gmail client, which I far prefer to Apple's mail client, because for me, replying on the iPad and iPhone is just really, really awkward. I would never do it for anything more than a sentence. And so as a result, I do a lot of looking at messages and hopefully just saying, good, notice that, let it be read, and it goes away. And that is, of course, the majority of my mail. I mean, keep in mind, when I do things, when I have to take a manual action to mark something as unread, that's the 3% of my mail. That the 97% of my mail is read it, move on. And I don't want to file it. I don't want to delete it. I don't want to touch it again. I just want to move on. And so I see mail as a stream where I'm trying to get through it as quickly as possible.
Do you ever have the experience of you've marked something as unread, and now later on you can't remember if this is one that you really haven't read or one that you read and decided you wanted to mark it as unread to flag it for future, you know, processing?
Nah, I have a very good memory.
So that could be a key there. If you have a really good memory, Adam's system might be great for you. And if you have a
It's true. I mean, you know, it's just like, I mean, honestly, what happens is that I'll go through all the new mail in a day, and then I'll get down to that last one that I left unread yesterday or 2 days ago or whatever, and hopefully I'll deal with it. But sometimes I'll get to it and go, oh, yeah, I remember what I don't want to do with that one, and I'll leave it there. So, I mean, this is, in fact, just saying exactly what you said in your article, Joe, which is if I were concerned, if this thing stressed me out, my problem would be, well, just man up and do it. You know, there's not so much mail in my inbox that I couldn't get through it this afternoon, but I would have to do that and not do something else. And so
right.
The fact is, I've got more important things to do. So, any event, let's move on. Jeff.
Hello.
How are you about your email?
I am not very stressed, although I'm sure that I know people who, if they were to look at my inbox, would get stressed about it. But it doesn't really stress me out. I don't go for the inbox zero. I have about 184 messages in my mailbox right now. I use Mail. under OS X, and things that you know I can respond to right away, I will do that. But I'm also like Adam, where sometimes I will just be, you know, very focused on something, and if I have to, not even like spend some time on something, but if it's something that I have to like shift my brain to deal with, if it's just, you know, something completely different from what I'm working on, then I'll just leave it there and I won't deal with it. And so usually, like when I finish big projects, I'll go back through and, you know, issue lots of apologies to people that I didn't follow up on something, you know, and usually it's not a big deal. And there's, you know, there's a lot of stuff that I keep in there as, you know, occasional reminders, like I need to renew some domain names, and I just haven't gotten to that yet. So as long as that's sort of, you know, staring at me in the face, I can deal with it when I have, you know, time to do something that's not as high of a priority. So I think for me, managing email, my big breakthrough. So I started off with Claris Emailer long ago. I didn't start off with it, but that's where I sort of, you know, thought, okay, now it's time to really organize mail. And it was great, except that I got into this habit of I had to file everything. I had to put, you know, everything by projects and people and by date and all that. And then so I went from there, moved to Eudora, was doing the same thing. And like that was more stressful than anything and time consuming and all that. And so for me, my big breakthrough was screw it. Everything that I've read goes into one big filed folder. And if I need to find it, I can search for it. And actually, I find that search in mail is decent enough for what I need. If that doesn't work.
So you're using mail because for me, using Gmail and Gmail's web interface, search is lightning fast.
Yeah.
But I've had trouble whenever I try to search my full mail archive in mail. It's just a backup, but even still, it's just mind-bogglingly slow.
It's fine for me. And if there's something that I just can't find, then I will go use Gmail on the web.
Hmm. You're using Gmail as a server.
Yeah. 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 I ran into a situation a few years ago. I had a mail provider that, they just disappeared for like 4 days. And so since then, and it was actually fastmail.fm. And I still use them despite that because they, you know, learned a valuable lesson because, I mean, like they were nuked and paved. They were in very bad situation. And so basically now, like all of my email first hits Gmail. Gmail does a lot of, server-side filtering, getting rid of the spam stuff, and then pushes it to Fastmail, where I pick it up from mail using IMAP. So I have at least a little bit of redundancy there just in case, you know, something happens.
So you said you have about 184 messages in your inbox, but those are just sort of things that you're worrying about. What's the oldest one?
The oldest one would be, it's probably like a couple of years old.
So it sounds like the same
2010.
Yeah, it sounds like the same kind of thing that I run into is that the only downside of this is that there are messages that are just going to sit there that you're frankly never going to deal with. And maybe that's not really any different than saying I've intentionally ignored this. It's a way of saying I am unintentionally ignoring this.
Right. And you know, it's like, let's see, the oldest message I have was some feedback on some video that I did. And, you know, like that's still good information that I refer to every once in a while. is that if you're looking through my 184 messages, like you know, the oldest one's down here, but probably like 150, 160 of those are within the last, you know, 2 or 3 months. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's not this even distribution of time.
Okay.
Now, this also tells me though we should have a whole fight about whether oldest is at the top or oldest is at the bottom.
Bottom.
Because clearly,
of course.
No, that's so wrong.
You don't have a top or bottom in yours.
They're all just floating around. There is no up and down.
Okay, one last thing, Jeff. iPhone, yes. iPad, how do you deal with mail there?
I have my iPhone and my iPad also picking up my IMAP email. Sometimes I'll refer to things if it's something that requires more, more thought or a longer response, then I'll wait and deal with it on my Mac. But I find that I'm one of the neat things about having the iPad, and I agree, I also wake up and scan my email, and woe to anybody who gets a reply early in the morning from us.
I'm so telling your wives.
I think our wives know.
Yeah. So some wives are actually looking at email earlier than we are. But what I will do, and I know this sounds totally lazy, but I will, have my iPad once we get my daughter out at the door to school, and I will sit in the kitchen and I will go through my email while I'm having breakfast and just sort of do that so that I'm not like having to go rush up to the office. And so, I'm still getting things done. I'm clearing things out so that when I do get upstairs and sit down in front of my Mac, then I can start working on stuff and not catching up on all the correspondence stuff, which is good on the iPad, whereas, I can't do page layout or whatever on the iPad. I need that to do on the Mac.
And are you actually replying on the iPad, or are you just reading and marking stuff for later in some way?
Sometimes. I mean, it really depends. Oftentimes, most things don't require long replies, and so I'll just go ahead and do it there. Again, it's easier for me on the iPad because it's a little easier to type on versus the iPhone.
Sure.
Unless it's something really, like something demands attention right away, then, I'll deal with it right then.
Okay. Well, moving on. Michael, so how stressed out do you feel in sunny Santa Monica?
I'm stressed out about everything in my life, so the email is just a very small part of it. I'm actually not really stressed out about email at all. I've been using email for God knows how many decades now, and it doesn't really bother me if I have a full inbox or an empty inbox. I deal with stuff or I don't deal with stuff. It's pretty much
that's a very California attitude, dude.
It's totally laissez-faire, as in lazy.
So tell us what your basic strategy is.
I have no strategy. No, seriously, it's if anything, it's the default strategy I developed in the years before email, when I would have a desk and I'd have stacks of paper on it of things I had to do. And eventually, if stuff, got to the bottom of the stack and I hadn't dealt with it in months, it could be thrown away because it was no longer a priority item. And that kind of applies to email for me as well. I can't tell you the last time other than this phone call that I ever even looked in my inbox. I use mail, but I don't look at my inbox. I have a unified inbox for like four or five different email accounts that go back for years for whatever reasons. But I do have smart mailboxes, and I use those quite a bit in mail. And the email box that I look at most often is the one marked today, which brings together all the email that I've received within the last day. And that's the one, that I try to deal with.
I'm sensing a trend here. So if it's come in today, you deal with it. And if it doesn't somehow get dealt with, it's not in today anymore.
Yes. However, for those things that I know may take a few days, I make use of the flags in mail.
Mm.
And usually a red flag, for things that I know I have to deal with. I'll have different colored flags for things like, this is something I want to remember, but I don't have to do anything about it. And I'll have smart mail boxes for those.
What color is that flag? I'm just, no.
mail in Mountain Lion gives you a bunch of colors. I think there's, let's see, how many are there now? There's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 flags, kind of like the 7 colors you get in the Finder. And they're marked things like important, in progress, interesting, silly, that sort of thing.
So do you end up filing messages in mailboxes as well? I mean, one of the things that I guess I didn't quite say is that for me, I filter a whole lot of stuff as it comes in, mailing lists and things that are obvious.
Otherwise,
I don't filter. I mean, I don't file stuff.
I have rules in mail, and I'd say there may be about 25 or 30 of them at this point, because some of them go back from before mail to when I use Eudora to when I use Claris Emailer. Always a fine program, and I miss it terribly. For some of the things like the mailing list, like the Shakespeare reading list emails that I get, those immediately go into the Shakespeare. They get filtered right there. There's a bunch of other ones as well. For various friends of mine, there are mailboxes that are dedicated to them. Their stuff gets shuttled there immediately, but it still shows up in today in the smart mailbox, so I can still deal with incoming messages from that, and I don't even have to think about filing it. Let's see. Yeah, that's pretty much it. If you want to know how many messages in my inbox, I just looked, and it's about 967 currently. And the oldest one goes back to 2009.
Excellent.
And eventually, sometimes I'll just grab a bunch of them and toss them in the mailbox that appeared in mail relatively recently called Archive. And so that...
You use, and correct me, you use iCloud for your mail provider, right? So you're...
For my primary mail provider, but I also have my own digital medievalist email box that I get stuff from, and I even still have an AOL mailbox that I only get spam from, but I haven't gotten rid of it because A, it's free, and B, the spam is sometimes hysterical.
The one thing I will caution people about with old AOL, Yahoo mailboxes, things like that, is that it's pretty common to see those accounts getting hacked for one reason or another and then being used to send spam. I've gotten a lot of that kind of, you know, address book spam for someone who, you know, had a Yahoo account, you know, hasn't used it in 3 years, but the address book is still there, the account's still there, so, you know, a spammer gets in, sends a spam, and I, you know, reply saying, it looks like your account's been hacked.
If only somebody could explain how to use better passwords to prevent that from happening.
If only
there were a book that helped you take control of your passwords.
Even when I used AOL back in the dark before times, you know, when we were still wearing fur pelts and like that, I never used their address book. So if they want to hack my address book, they won't find anything. I have an Earthlink mailbox. I've got a Gmail mailbox.
Yeah.
So those all show up in my unified mailbox. On my portable devices?
Yeah, I was going to ask.
I have some IMAP mailboxes that I use when I want to filter things when I'm on the road. And then when I get back home, I'll apply the filters to those mailboxes, and they get routed to the right place eventually.
Oh, so all your filters are local then?
Yeah, they're local because I'm using iCloud, and iCloud doesn't have a server.
You need smart mailboxes and stuff like that. So.
I would switch to Gmail, but I don't know who I trust less, Apple or Google. You know?
Well, you know, there was this whole big scandal that broke today about iCloud filtering mail.
That's true, but luckily I'm not sending things about underage teens, so I'm, you know.
Barely legal teens, let's be correct. Barely they were legal.
Right. Well, I was a barely legal teen for most of my childhood, you know. Or barely ethical, maybe, would be a better way of putting it.
I believe Dan Morin and Lex Friedman had an article at Macworld where they proved that you could not send mail about barely legal teens through iCloud. So I haven't read the article yet, but I saw the John Maltz post about the article.
Yeah, I find that a little bit disturbing, and I know sooner or later something will be done about that, because once the eye of the public is on Apple for having done something, They try to make it a little bit better so they don't get a black eye in the press.
We've had trouble. Apple does a lot of filtering, and we've had trouble with Tidbits periodically getting filtered by Apple. And luckily, I have just enough contact still kind of deep within the bowels of Apple operations where I've been able to send someone mail and say, look, we're getting a lot of problems here. Can you please, you know, kick your spam filter? And usually after a week or two, they do. So
what I have to do is put the phrase barely legal teen into a Tidbits article and then send that to Apple because nobody will get it. And they'll fix that.
I think you pretty much heard my email story. I do answer some email on the iPad and the iPhone. I love it for the dictation capabilities, so you know, I don't even have to type on the iPad.
Okay. Well, Tanya, let's move on to you. I have a feeling you might be a little more stressed than some of the rest of these people about your email.
Well, she has real work to do. Not me.
All right, well, now that my microphone isn't muted, I'm a lot less stressed. I think in reflection, and there's been a bit of reflection lately, it's not really my email that stresses me out per se. It's more like what some other people have said, where it's a symptom of a problem. If there's a lot of email building up, there's a lot building up. And so it's not really the email's fault exactly. But I have a number of things to say about my email. I was actually jotting down some notes while everyone else was talking. First, I would say that to judge from people's email strategies, the people on this call who reply to me the most quickly, Michael absolutely wins. He replies to me just amazingly quickly, and Joe takes a close second.
Sorry, Jeff.
Adam and Jeff are both entirely fun to work with, but they do not take first or second. So be that
but that's because you can yell at me up the stairs.
That's true. If it's really urgent, I just go talk to Adam. Or I can text message him. And actually, to be fair, he's very good on the text messaging.
You
can
text always
message any of these folks, actually, but Adam
you
and I.
You can text message me in bed, even.
That's true.
All hours of the day.
Moving right along.
You can always open the door and yell to me.
I use Gmail. I like any IMAP client or any IMAP mail would probably be okay, but I do like to have it available on lots of devices. I use Mailplane on my Mac, which is kind of a Gmail wrapper to just put it in its own window so it's not all over my web browsing. I want to offer a tip before I go any further, which is when I'm done with an email session in Gmail, I try very hard to not leave the focus on my inbox. That way, if I discover that I want to write a message to somebody, I don't have to look at my inbox in order to write it. Because that's the kiss of death. You think, oh my gosh, I have to email Michael to get him to do something with a book tonight. And if you open up your mail program and it confronted with your inbox, it will take you 30 minutes to finish looking at your inbox and send that 2-minute message. So that's just a tip I wanted to pass on because it's pretty effective for me. Yes, I have edited numerous books by Joe over the years about how to use your email. And even though I don't often speak about it or write about it, I've certainly absorbed a lot of information. So I definitely use lots of filters to take all the incoming mail. And if there's any routine way to stick it off in some other mailbox, I do it. I have a very large number of filters, which sometimes makes me very nervous. I really liked it back in Eudora. In Eudora, you could get these little dinosaur icons by filters that hadn't been used in a really long time. And if I got one of those on some crazy filter I'd made for some weird, you know, thing that was coming in, and I would know I could probably get rid of that filter, and that just made me feel better. So I wish Gmail had that feature because I worry that I'm accumulating excessive filters that I don't really need anymore.
I think Google has the CPU cycles to spare.
Yeah, maybe. Maybe that's true. But I'll see in my Growl notifications, I'll see that email arrives. But it will sometimes take like 30 seconds or a minute before I can read the message in my inbox. So I'm worried that there's some.
That's actually, I think that might be a different issue. I've noticed that the Growl notifications are somehow unrelated to when things actually pop up. They're not, it's not always exactly connected. in the way that, that Mailplane handles it. I think that's a Mailplane specific thing. Although that said, I don't frankly use Growl notifications for email because I get way too
I turned them off actually for email, but it was fun for a while. So as to how I manage my email, confession time, I have 1,326 messages in my inbox right now. Sorry, Joe.
Anya wins!
But I want to clarify that some people watching this probably know that I'm the person who answers customer support email for the Take Control series. I was getting a lot of mail there too, and I solved that problem by actually I've had people helping me for almost the past year with customer support email. And so I probably handle only about 30% of those messages, and definitely the solution to just getting a lot of email there was to get help. And that is a completely separate inbox, which gets more attention. I certainly would not want to have 1,000 messages in there. No, we do better for that. So when messages come into my inbox, what do I do with them? I will tell you about the things that I think are working well. I triage. I get a lot of mail that's kind of personal logistics, you know, getting together with friends over the weekend, people coming into town to visit. Do I want to sign my kid up for some special program? All that goes into a separate mailbox. I call it logistics. I try to spend a half an hour a day dealing with things in that mailbox, and that is successful for me as a way to deal with that. I have a mailbox called events. Events are for all the things that other people think that I should do, whether it's a meeting, a conference, a book to read, a movie to watch, anything that frankly is optional that someone else thinks I should do. There's probably a 99.9% chance that that suggestion will be put into events, and honest to God, I will never look at it again. But it's there in case I should happen to get bored. Maybe, you know, in 10 years, I will actually go through this. And for the things that are still available, videos, books, I would be delighted to enjoy all that stuff. But I get a ridiculous number of suggestions, and there's no way. Similarly, I have a folder called Coffee Break. Coffee Break is for all those articles people send you because they are sure you would love reading them, whether it is about some kind of mammal that you have claimed to like I like polar bears, so I get polar bear stuff, whether it's an obscure fact about, Linux or whatever it is, I can't read all this stuff. I already sit at my desk for way too much time. So it goes in the folder called Coffee Break under the theory that sooner or later I'll be sitting back with a cup of coffee and I will go through this folder. And honestly, I do sometimes go back to that folder. I would say that 20% of the stuff in that folder gets read and enjoyed. And the rest of it is there in case, you know, for example, should I happen to have to spend 6 months in a hospital because I have broken my legs, I will go through my coffee break folder and all this great stuff will be there for me.
That's a long coffee break.
That is a long coffee break. So that's all good. I also personally, do bookkeeping for the entire Tidbits Enterprise, which involves paying 20 to 30 people a month, all email pertaining to invoices, choices, special situations, money in, money out, goes into a particular folder, and once a month I really do go through the whole thing, and every single to-do item relating to bookkeeping for Tidbits is done, and that works. So all that is good. The part of my email that I struggle with and why I have 1,326 messages in my inbox are all the things that come in where you don't really have to do them, but it would be sort of nice if you did. And I guess I probably have at least 1,300 things that I don't really have to do, but it would be nice if I did. And that's not to count the messages that I have put in other optimistically labeled mailboxes, such as to do this week, to do this month, to do really soon, to do after Macworld. I probably have 20 mailboxes in my mail system with old things that I really thought I should do if only I could get to them, but I can never actually get to them because of all the new messages that come in because people want me to read articles, watch TV shows, go to movies, go to parties, and do other stuff. And so it's not that I won't do or am opposed to doing all this stuff. I just can't get to it. And worse, I'll go into something, you know, one of these mailboxes I've created, and there will be literally 100 things that I really ought to do. So I can't do 100. Maybe I can do 4. So I'll pick out the 4 that seem most important. But frankly, I've got so many of them, and so many of them are years old that at some point you just say, oh my God, this thing is from, you know, this thing is from before my son was born. My son's 14. You know, I think everyone's forgotten. So then you can just delete it. And it's horrible. But the problem is it's so hard for me to just say, no, I'm not going to do it. It would be a good idea, but I don't have time. So that's where I struggle. And I think you could call that email stress, but it's sort of more like it's just my situation in life. There are so many great things to do and they just pour in. People have so many great ideas for how I could spend my time and what I could do. And at some point I just have to say, you know, I want to go outside and go running more than I want to sit here and look at 1,000 things that I haven't done. So
you need a mailbox
my story.
You need a mailbox titled Handle After Reincarnation.
Well, I guess that explains why you never replied to my email about that movie about the polar bears drinking coffee that I really wanted you to go see.
Oh, sorry.
You should have sent it to me. I'd love that movie.
And I also want to say that Joe might have his inbox at 1 or 0 or whatever right now, but he sent me like 12 emails today. I'm like, good, well, you got it off your plate.
That's my secret, is I push my stuff onto other people. Like, here, you worry about this and you worry about that.
So, Tanya, the one last thing that I'm curious about is what do you think about iPhone and iPad for reading mail?
I use my iPhone a lot to preview my mail. It's a really fast way just to get the highlights of what's come in recently. And I really like to just whip through it. I don't like to file on my iPhone because I do have a lot of mailboxes for stuff I want to go back to. I am bad at searching in Gmail. I understand how to search, of course, but a lot of the time my mail just gets lost. And so I find if it's something that I think I may want to come back to, that it is very helpful to file it. And on the iPhone, no matter how I try to arrange all my little labels, I end up having to do a lot of scrolling to file stuff. Maybe there's an app for that, but I'm not using it. But I really do like to preview my mail there. And I love to use voice dictation to reply to short email there. That's been working really well for me. I don't much read email on the iPad because the iPhone is really good in really mobile situations. It's good in bed, that kind of thing. The iPad is not very much smaller than my MacBook Air, so I'd rather use the MacBook Air with the full Gmail features.
Okay. Well, I think we kind of span the gamut. I mean, it's a whole bunch of different strategies here, some of which may or may not be as effective by other people's criteria. But at least, you know, apart from Tanya, who I think is stressed out about there being more to do in life than she has time for.
Right.
It's more of an existential problem.
I think perhaps some of the lesson here is really that, you know, I think Joe's point that it's not email that's broken, it's you, is part of it. But it's also that if you think email is broken, maybe you just need to change your perspective. You know, maybe you just need to say, oh, well, there are too many fabulous things, too many great ideas, too many other stuff out there that I would like to do that seem to be coming in my email, and I'm just going to go with it. And, you know, I have to not feel bad about not being able to do absolutely everything.
Don't waste your time reading email when you could be reading my book.
Shameless, man.
Very shameless. I would also say, recommend that, like, if email is really stressing you out, if you just, like, you know, get hives because you're looking at it, like, go for the nuke it from orbit option, which is because when I switched over from Eudora to Mail, and I had all those folders and all that stuff, and I had I probably had 800, 900 messages in my inbox. I did a quick scan, made sure that, you know, the really important stuff was taken care of, and then everything got filed into one mailbox, and it was done. It was like, okay, this stuff, I'm not dealing with it now, so I'm not going to deal with it anyway. So I just got rid of it, and it was like spiritually freeing to be able to do that and say, ah. Now, you know, it didn't last very long.
That was the wisdom of my stack method, you know.
Yeah.
When the stack got so high, throw away the bottom half. Happy as could be.
Well, I will say that I actually had somewhat the same experience, Jeff. I think it was 2009 when I switched from Eudora to Gmail. Mm-hmm. And one of the basic principles that I took during the shift was to start fresh, that I wasn't going to attempt to bring over mailboxes, actually, or even messages. Mm-hmm. That, you know, it took, I don't know, a couple of weeks where, you know, I still had stuff in Eudora that I had to go back and look at every now and then to reply to something new that had come in Gmail. But after a couple of weeks, it was cleared out. And I, you know, basically the Eudora archive got consulted, you know, once a month, then once every couple of months. And, you know, now it's maybe once or twice a year that I go back to that Eudora archive. And I'm still glad I have it. I don't mind having it. But it was definitely one of those things where, yep, it's just gone. And, and it's not a bad thing.
But, and the Eudora archive is great because it's all just text. So I don't need to worry about the fact that I can't open Eudora anymore. I can just search the text. And I did the same thing. Every once in a while, like, there was some, you know, or like at, you know, tax time, I had to go and find, you know, some sort of thing. And it was easy to find, and then it was done.
Well, and I think Tanya's also said a couple of times, you know, when we were talking about email, she's like, and maybe someone could break into my Gmail account and delete all my mail. Wouldn't that be awful? And while we certainly don't really want that to happen, I think that is the sort of the, oh, well, it was nuked from orbit accidentally approach.
Yeah. I think basically...
Skynet.
I think Tanya needs two things. Tanya needs a full-time assistant that can handle all this, and apparently a full-time felon who can get rid of the things that she really doesn't want to look at anymore.
No, I have the solution for you.
I read the book!
You hire somebody to go see movies for you. You know, you hire somebody to read books and go to museums and, like, look at pictures of animals. And then you can just dispose of all that stuff and no more stress. I mean,
I think isn't that Tim Ferriss guy with his 4-hour work week? He would recommend that we outsource that to India.
There are people in India who would watch movies really, really cheap. I mean, cheaper than in New York, so...
Well, these are great suggestions, guys. Just don't write them up and send them to me in email.
Hey, take control of outsourcing. There you go.
Well, so I will admit, the, you know, after the Joe's article came out and I started having this idea, I thought, well, gee, maybe we should do a take control of email overload book, which wouldn't be the one technique, because clearly the one technique doesn't work for everybody. For instance, as I said, I don't file much. You know, if a filter doesn't get my mail, the only thing I will file manually are order receipts, because they can't be identified unless it's, you know, from Amazon, where I'll order relatively frequently.
But you know what? You can delete those, because if you want to know what you bought on Amazon, you can just look at your account.
Oh, so the reason why I keep them is so when my wife sends me email saying, what did you buy from Amazon January 11th, 2013, I can look in my email really quickly and find it.
That's true. Mm. Or you could share your password with me, but wait, that would be tricky.
So in any event, but my point with the, you know, with the sort of the thought about this book was, I wonder if there are sort of a variety of techniques out there for different people. You know, someone may be in a situation where, for instance, they work with a lot of outside vendors and on projects, and maybe for them, filing on a project basis is tremendously important because they can't filter. You know, they're dealing with internal, you know, colleagues, external people from multiple different companies, that would require a lot, very different approach than those of us who can really get by with, like, the Gmail search approach. So, but as you know, there could be like a series of approaches for different kinds of people, because I think there are a lot of people who do feel stressed out about their email, and they do it perhaps because they haven't hit upon what works for them. I mean, you know, I think we're being a little glib when we say it's not email that's broken, it's you. But there are times when you have to know what you want, and you have to be able to sit down and think about that and come up with those techniques. And that's not always easy to do on your own if you don't have the experience.
Who has the time?
There is one scenario that none of us have really touched on, because I don't think any of us fall into that category. Tanya may be the closest. But that's people who have a full-time day job with a separate email account just for that. So they actually have to manage a bunch of personal email coming in to their personal accounts, and then all the stuff that comes into their office, their work.
There's a simple solution to that. Quit your job. I mean...
Well, no, just get outsourced, like happened to me 3, 4, 5 times. That works too.
Actually... Well, go ahead.
Yeah, I do think that that's actually an interesting point, although my understanding from talking to people who work with a bunch of millennials, people younger than us, is that they want to do everything at work. They don't really separate work and personal life and, you know, Facebook, email. Actually, I don't much do email. They just do Facebook.
They're so young and stupid.
So, but no, that's a good point, Michael, that you know, a lot of people do not have those kinds of, they need to do more separation. And so things that might work at work may not be either necessary or even functional at home, depending on the kind of mail that people get. Okay, well, this has been fun. I didn't know what everyone did, and now I do, and it's fascinating that, you know.
But you know what's interesting to me is that this now tells me how I need to behave differently when sending email to some of you.
Know your audience, I believe, is the term, you know, the phrase. But it's absolutely true. I mean, one of the things that people actually sometimes don't think about is that you can do your part to cut down on other people's email overload as well.
Yes.
You know, there are times and places to just send one, you know, message to say thanks. You know, yes, they're short, but they still have to be looked at. So, you know, you got to really think about sometimes those are good. Sometimes you're just contributing. And you know, I think all of us kind of run into that, you know, on either end of it. Yeah, Tanya.
I raised my hand because I think a really interesting or important part of email etiquette, if you will, is there's a difference between sending a message where you are just saying thank you, or you're just saying, hey, you know, I liked what you did. No need to reply, or just keeping it very short, because what you're asking for in exchange is nothing or something also very short. You're just asking for a little interaction maybe. But when you send a message sort of, you know, asking a very vague question that really nobody could possibly answer without taking at least 5 or 10 minutes, if not a half an hour or 45 minutes, then you're asking that person for a chunk of their time, and that may make it significantly harder for the person to reply to you. So, for instance, if you were emailing anybody on this call, Adam, Jeff, Joe, or Michael, it would be lovely if you would Google for a solution to your technical problem before you ask us, because if we don't just happen to exactly know the answer, if we do, what we're probably going to do is Google to see if there's a really good article that's already been written to solve your problem. So if you can do that first, you'll solve your own problem, and then, you know, just sort of allow us to learn more new stuff so we can help you with something really unique that you might come up with later. Hi, yeah. Kitty. But just in general, when you send someone an open-ended question, you're not asking them for a 30-second reply. You're asking them for a chunk of time. And certainly what we all run into is there are probably only 4 to 10 hours in a day when we're going to sit at a computer. If 8 people write in asking for a half an hour each of time, that's 4 hours. And, you know, at some point things just start to break. So it's important to, I mean, for all of us to be aware of that in all the ways that we email people, regardless of who's being emailed or what's the topic.
Okay, I think that's absolutely true. And the only downside of that is we get to look a lot smarter than we potentially are because we've looked it up on Google and replied as though it was our knowledge. So, but in any event, we've clearly devolved into cats and stuffed animals, so I think we'll call it quits for this week. Thank you for listening, for those people who have been with us live, and those who are watching after the fact, thanks for watching.